We have today Bob Guyman, who is the assistant to Dr. Provost, and he's working here at the school now. He has spent several years at the University of Alaska and also has served on many different educational panels. We also have our own basketball coach, Mel Hankinson. I don't need to say much more about that. We have a special privilege of having another coach with us. Susan Armstrong is the assistant athletic women's trainer at UCLA and also the gymnastics coach. And last, but certainly not least, Ivan Chang. He was here last year. He is a junior high teacher and performer. The way we're going to start this, the format will be, we're going to start with Ivan, and then Susan, and then Bob Guyman, and then Mel Hankinson. They're each going to give 10 minutes to 12 minutes, just sharing their heart, telling you two things, basically, what they do and how they make it count for Christ. And with no further ado, we'll start with Ivan.
If he can,
you can sit or stand, whichever.
Can you guys all see me? I better stand so you can see me. As you know, my name is Ivan, and I teach in a public school for the Los Angeles Unified School District. Can you all hear me? I hear echoes. At McClay Junior High School. In recent weeks, you might have read about us in the newspaper. Unfortunately, it hasn't been all good. Some have been good, some have been bad. And it brings... I'm doing well here. Give me a break, okay? I generally work in front of junior high kids. Okay, I'll just do what I normally do. I'm corny anyway in class. As I was thinking about coming here today and what I would say, it occurred to me that, like Charles Dickens wrote, it was the best of years, it was the worst of years. It is the best of years, it is the worst of years. Things are different now than it was before. School now is a place of stark contrasts. You've got the best things going on there, you've got the worst things going on there. At a place that's traditionally been synonymous with wholesomeness and learning and peace and all of that, we're getting kids murdered, shot down by machine gun fire. On my own campus, we've had adults, TAs, assaulted, teachers assaulted. Some of them had to be taken to the hospital in ambulances. We've had students. Just a few weeks ago, a student was in front of my room and had his arm broken by other students who were basically intimidating him because of something that they had done. And he refused to say who did it. He said nothing happened, although his arm was 90 degrees out of whack with the rest of his arm. It's the worst of years. It's the best of years. I don't know the causes of it. It could be the teacher strike that's going on, in case you're wondering. I do bubble my grades. I do turn in my grades. I don't believe in putting kids between the strike issue and the pay and all that. But what I see myself doing there is that the school is a missions field. It's a place that desperately needs Christians to exert a positive influence. It's a place today that is just falling apart. We have curriculum written and designed specifically to throw out the Bible. You might have heard of something called Project 10. I was talking with another Christian teacher just a couple days ago. Project 10 deals with homosexuality, and the school district right now is trying to introduce this curriculum that they've got money for. The federal government's paying for it. They're buying all these new books to teach kids why homosexuality is legitimate and all right. And as part of the curriculum, explicitly saying the Bible is wrong. I mean, that's part of the curriculum that's written in there. So you see, that's going on, and Christians need to be there to say, stand up and say, no, this is not the truth. This is the way it should be. And what I see, unfortunately, is it happens to me too. I get frustrated and I get discouraged, and the temptation is to just check out and say, forget this. It's too hard a battle, and of late, I've had some frustrating moments with my students, and I've pondered that, you know, and like Paul in Philippians, Lord, why don't you just take me home, but to remain on better is far more important. And it's that dilemma that I feel day in and day out. you've got kids who need to hear the gospel, and you've got teachers who need to hear the gospel, and you've got to stand up and be the salt and the light while the school district and lots of ungodly people are introducing terrible, terrible things into the curriculum. The clinics on the campuses that dispense birth control is nothing compared to what else they do. I mean, that's nothing. That's tame. We've got violence. And what's sad about it is non-Christians, they just keep pulling back. They keep retreating. Okay, the kids are doing this. Well, let's accept them for what they are, and we'll just... Kids are having sex, so we'll just give them birth control. Instead of saying it's wrong, they turn around. Well, there's homosexuality, so let's, instead of saying it's wrong, let's just say it's okay and help them adjust to the school and help other students adjust to them. On and on and on it goes. And the temptation, again, is for Christians to check out and say, let me go to a Christian school, let me go to a church, work in the youth ministry. And the result is, with fewer Christians, there are fewer people who stand up and say this is wrong, and it just gets worse and worse. My exhortation or encouragement to those of you who are considering going into education is that you are desperately needed. And it takes a lot of guts, it takes a lot of courage, and a lot of commitment, because it's not an easy job. What's my time like? Okay. It's not an easy job. And there are going to be times when you're going to want to say, this is too hard. Because I say that all the time. And I come home and say, this is too hard. I don't want to do this anymore. But it's the Lord that just keeps me there. And it's a job that you have to go in with a lot of prayer. It's not a job where you can just go and say, oh, I'll go and or do what I have to do and go home. Because those kids will stay with you. And, you know, when a student calls you up and says, Mr. Chang, I'm pregnant, or I find out that my student's been arrested for attempted murder and he's in jail, and you know, on and on it goes. Every day something happens. Every day something happens. And you can't leave it. Kids call me up. I had a student call me up last night about financial aid to go for college. This is a former student who's now in high school. And it never stops. So it's not a job where it's an 8-to-5 job. You go there. I mean, you could make it that way, but then God really can't use you. And you have to make yourself available and give your lives to the kids. And that's what really drains you, because so often you don't see the fruits and you see kids go the other way. And it hurts incredibly to see that. And for a kid to say to your face, after you've poured your life into that child, trying to help them learn, and they say to you, F you, to your face. And it's devastating. By the way, that is a criminal offense. They could go to jail for that. This morning I had a conference with a student who did that to me. And I opted not to call the police and instead called the parent in, and we're going to have the student stay after school and work with me. But that's the situation now. It's not a fun little place. I teach at a school that's in between upper class and the dumps. We're across the street from a housing project, and you know, a lot of kids. We're the only school in the valley, San Fernando Valley, that's on federal assistance. 85% of our kids are on the meal program. So it's not entirely inner city, so we got a variety of kids. But the school situation today is desperate. And crime and violence have replaced things like paper throwing and talking in class. You read the papers, it's not the same as it was when you were in school. The biggest problems now that we come here to talk about, are not, well, how can we get the kids to be quiet? It's how can we get the guns off our campus? How can we get the knives off our campus? How can we keep the teachers safe so they don't get beat up by baseball bats like it happened a few weeks ago? So be in prayer. Even if you don't want to go into education, be in prayer for people who do and for the kids, because they need to know Christ. They're going to be adults in a few years, and the kids who don't know Christ today will be the adults who don't know Christ tomorrow. So thank you for letting me speak. Thank you.
Just a note, I know many of you are thinking of questions and things you'd like to ask. After we each get their presentation, we'll have a question and answer time. So be thinking of things you'd like to ask. Next, Susan Armstrong.
Thank you. Thank you all for inviting me to come speak today. I think first I'll explain a little bit about what I do as an athletic trainer. Oftentimes there's confusion about our job and confusion between an athletic trainer and a coach, and it's very different professions. We assist the coaches in their job, but we don't do actual coaching of the athletes. Our job more is in the athletic injury management, and this can involve prevention. That's a big part of our job. We do fitness testing, body composition measurements. We do stretching and flexibility programs with our athletes. We do nutrition counseling. We use protective devices. We monitor the environmental conditions. If it's really hot out, really cold out, really high humidity, we might limit practices. We also do a lot of preventative taping. That's probably what you're most familiar with, is seeing the trainers tape everyone's ankles. We do a lot of that. We also do injury evaluations. That can be on an emergency basis, CPR, head and neck injuries, transport to the emergency room, or an acute orthopedic injury, maybe a fracture or a dislocation, or we often have chronic overuse injuries in our athletic population. So we'll evaluate the injury and determine a course of treatment, and we'll perform the treatment in the training room. We also decide whether or not our athletes should be referred to a physician. And if we do refer them to the physician, then we perform the follow-up care that the doctor recommends. Another aspect would be the rehabilitation of injuries, especially in the post-operative phases after our athletes have surgery. We'll take them from the day after they have surgery to their back to full competition. And then another big aspect, and one of our absolute favorites, is record keeping. We have lots of paperwork for each athlete. We do daily updates to our coaches on the status of the athletes, what they're limited for that particular practice. So we need to be very familiar with each sport and the demands of the sport, and not just say, well, this person can't run today, you know, and they're a basketball player, the coach. The big joke is always, you know, they can practice, they just can't run or jump. And that's not what the coach wants to hear. So we try and come up with creative drills and other things they can be doing while we get them back into full practice. We also, especially at UCLA, have to keep our sports information department apprised of our athletes' condition because of the media coverage. And we often forget and get phone calls from them. So we just generate a lot of paper. Another aspect would be event coverage. We cover our team's practices so that we're there. If an injury occurs, we can evaluate it right when it happens, oftentimes seeing the mechanism of the injury so that we can give more rapid care versus if they get injured and then they don't see a doctor or another medical person for 5 or 6 hours, the condition can change so much it's hard to know exactly what had happened previously. We cover their competitions, we cover tournaments, and we also have host a lot of NCAA championships, which brings to the next point, which is organization. Organizational skills are a big part of our job because of hosting events and coordinating events. Also, we give an annual symposium every year. We also have a student athletic trainer program that we've developed with a curriculum, and we do research with our team physicians. We also are in charge of our drug testing, which is another one of our favorite aspects of our job. We do monthly random testing of our athletes. Like Ivan said, you know, we're out in the real world, and there's some real problems going on. But probably the biggest aspect of our job is using interpersonal skills. We act as liaison or mediators between all the groups of people, between athletes and coaches, parents, coaches, athletes, team doctors, administrators. recruits. We are, the coaches get mad at the doctors, so we talk to the coaches and the doctors and bring them together. The athletes are mad at the coaches, so we get them together. The administrators aren't happy with the coaches, so we talk to them. Our job requires lots of listening, lots of understanding, lots of getting yelled at, and bringing your tongue to not answer back to people, but to respond in a godly manner is often challenging. A typical day for us might include some morning meetings. We're great on meetings. And a big part of our job, our administrators look to us to keep meetings, research meetings, meetings where we're supposed to be planning education for the athletes, to keep them on a practical basis. As you know, many times meetings talk a lot, not a lot gets accomplished. And so our job is to make sure it gets down to a practical level. What benefit is this going to be for our athletes? How can this maximize their performance in a better way? Then the training room opens about 11. From about 11 to 1, we deal with our paperwork or talk about dealing with our paperwork and do rehabilitation, a little more individual rehabilitation with our athletes. Then from about 1 to 3, it's kind of like a mass unit, and about all 150 of our athletes come in at once to get taped and treated before practice. Almost every single one of our athletes comes in and gets some form of treatment before they go to practice. Then we go to practice, talk with the coach over the limitations that there may be for certain athletes, try and be encouraging about their progress. And then we start dealing with people coming in after practice, or if there were injuries during practice, start determining what course of care we should do. Then our team doctors come up every day about 5 o'clock. So on a daily basis, we have our athletes seeing our doctors. And then practices get done about 6:30 or 7, and then a little more post-treatment, and then catching up on paperwork again. So that's pretty much our day. The ministry aspects are so exciting. I mean, there's an excitement that's inherent in sports, I think you all know. But there's also the pressure of winning, and that's the bottom line, you know, especially our school. And what makes athletic training a great career for evangelism is this pressure. The athletes have many demands on them, and fame is very fleeting, and friends and fans are fickle, and their opinion changes perhaps as the athlete's performance changes. And we are kind of like the steady rock in the storm. They know that our opinion of them will not change based on their performance. Some of them we don't like, whether they do good or bad, but we try and love all of them with God's help. And the training room, though, becomes kind of a safe harbor where they can come in and relax and just be themselves. And we try and create that kind of environment where they can be relaxed and not feel the pressure. We don't allow outside people in our training room, no interviews in the training room, no groups of any kind. A lot of religious groups want to come and get a hold of our athletes too, but sorry, I got them first. So we just try and really develop a rapport and a relationship of trust with them that they can rely on us and our integrity and our honesty, because a lot of people tell the athletes a lot of different things, and it very often does not hold true. The biggest thing is the trust does take time, and it's just on a day-to-day basis, seeing them every day, the 3 to 5 minutes maybe I spend with an athlete. You just start asking them questions about their home life or school or their brothers and sisters, and just build from there. And each day you start learning more about the other, and you remember what they talked about the day before. People don't pay attention to them in that way and ask them about the other aspects of their life, and so they really respond to that. As a quick example, I'd like to share my experience with my favorite team, my gymnastics team. I've been on staff now 4 years. When I started there 4 years ago, my freshmen are now seniors, and a lot of things have happened. The first year was basically spent establishing myself with a coach, establishing my commitment to excellence so that he would know that I'm on his side, that the thing I strive for is to keep everyone healthy and for us to win. He doesn't really care if I'm a Christian or not. He wants us to win. So I need to show my medical knowledge first off and start building the relationship that way. Also, the challenges of being on the road, I would just begin by reading my Bible a lot openly with the team, having it around, doing my Bible study. Also, using my marriage as an example of a godly relationship that's not often seen. And it was challenging, especially the first year. You know, they tell a lot of off-color stories, and oftentimes I would get up and leave. And they didn't look down on me. They just grew to know that that wasn't something I would participate in. And, you know, we would go to dinner or do different things. Or they'd say, let's go to dinner, and so I'd go to dinner. Sometimes they'd say, let's go out. I'd say, okay, and then they'd get out the phone book and start looking up where, you know, the nearest bar was. And I'd say, well, sorry, I'm not going to go. And I'd just go back to my room. And at first I thought, you know, that this would ruin any relationship I would have with them. But it didn't. They respected my standards, and I'm glad now the coaches, kind of, if there's a Bible question, they ask me, if there's some morality issue, they'll say, well, Susan knows. And so you kind of become the Bible answer person. But it's really exciting. The second year, so the first year I just started to get to know the girls. The second year, we had a really big knee injury, and it was one of our former Olympians and an All-American, and she was really questioning why, and I was even questioning why. And it was probably the first injury that had me almost in tears. And through that, it's neat to see now this year she's become a Christian and she understands why she was hurt. And that was kind of the beginning of really sharing with the team. And then last year was another big step. The girl that got injured came to me and said, there's some news I think you'd be interested in. One of the other girls has to tell you. And she came up to me and she had become a Christian too. And so we started having Bible studies on the road, and a lot of the girls would be interested. And then because my first couple years I was a little frustrated because that's kind of how I envisioned it. You know, we'd have Bible studies, and it would just happen, and it didn't. It took a couple years to develop the relationships, and we started the Bible studies. And this year, they're now sharing with their teammates. I'm discipling a couple of the girls on a regular basis. And the team, some of the girls that I'm not meeting with, came and asked me if we could have prayer before our competition. So we now meet as a team and pray together out on the gym floor, not in a corner, hidden away. And I did ask you the coach's permission first. And, so we now do that. I also pray with a couple of girls before they go up on each event. And then they pray by themselves afterwards and give God the glory for the competition that they just finished. And we are ranked number one right now. Yeah, we have nationals in a week. And I just really praise God for what He has done there, and whether we win or not. I just thank Him for the blessings that we have had this year. But I'm praying that we win. So.
Bob Gannon.
Thank you, David. Can you hear me? Okay. It's time now to have this song. That's kind of a neat sound effect to listen to ice cubes coming out of the pitcher. I am really thrilled to be part of this series, and I'm really thrilled that this series exists. I'm really thrilled to be at the Master's College. Most of my life, work life, has been in secular education of one kind or another. And my wife and I have had so many good things happen to us in our lifetime, and we're really thankful to God for that. And we're thankful for all of the things that we've been able to do prior to coming to the Master's College. But we're absolutely convinced that the Lord wants us here right now. And I think because of some of the experiences we had before we came, as we're able to communicate those in a session like this or in individual visits with you all, and as we have an opportunity to work in a broader perspective from the administrative framework and all of that, in the training of future Christian leaders, we're just excited about that process. I'm really also excited at seeing so many of you here for this session. I don't want to minimize the value of a career in business and a career in so many of the other professions, but this is a profession that has crying needs and crying opportunities for strong Christian involvement, and it just thrills my heart to see so many of you here involved with this. Education is so many faceted, and you've already heard two very distinct facets, and the facet that I've been most involved with has been higher education administration in one form or another. My wife and I began at a different level in the process of education. We had the joy of teaching school in an Eskimo village in Alaska, way out in Nunavichuk, prior to the advent of snowmobiles and back in the days when a mail plane came in twice a week, and it was a big event when the mail plane came in. A tremendous time working with the Native people out in the Eskimo village. And then I had an opportunity for 5.5 years to work at a research center in Juneau before going on to the U.S. Office of Education in the Seattle Regional Office for 4 years. In the process of my administering programs at the federal level for 4 years in the states of Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Alaska, I got into probably 75 or 80% of the colleges in those four states. Had an opportunity of taking a look at some of the things that worked well, some of the things that didn't work. Picked up a perspective on mindsets and attitudes in regard to education and how people view their jobs. Moved on to heading up the major information center in the state of Alaska. Archives, manuscripts, rare books, historic photographs, oral history and traditions, translation program, distance delivery, high-tech document delivery around the state, so many things like that. And then ended up in the office of the chancellor as assistant to the chancellor, had the joy as oil revenues declined of working through the process of restructuring the University of Alaska. In the process of doing that, we took $34 million out of an under $184 million budget for operating the university. Education is so many faceted, has so many facets. There's so many things that you can do. But there are some overriding things in terms of climate that I thought I'd take just a couple minutes and talk about. In my perspective, education is very much a profession in turmoil. It's a profession that is just really ripe for intelligent, well-trained young people to move into. I'm just so pleased that so many of you are expressing an interest in that. From my perspective and observation, there are two kinds of people. And whenever you begin to characterize and generalize like this, you can get into trouble because there's some people that don't fit. But basically, there are two kinds of people. Those who are extremely dedicated to what they're doing, and those who absolutely exert the minimum amount of effort needed to collect a paycheck. And in the course of my time at different, and I'm speaking at the university level primarily, in the course of my time on university campuses and then 8.5 years at the University of Alaska, And the University of Alaska is not much different than any of the other universities or colleges where I was. But they're the people, some people, who are content to be on campus the 15 to 18 hours a week it takes to do the to meet the class and conform to the posted office hours and do very little from semester to semester to upgrade their teaching skills or anything. People like that, if they find someone to substitute for them in the classroom, can be gone 2 weeks on a hunting trip and no difficulty at all in the middle of a semester. Then there are the others who are there 40, 50, 60 hours a week just pouring their hearts out. And it's into that latter group that I consistently noted the Christians on the staff, those who've committed their lives to working with students for other than a paycheck, for the right reasons. And I can understand that, because as Christians, we should have a much better defined work ethic. And generally we do. As Christians, we're working with a much greater sense of purpose. And that comes through. Our values are there, and our values are really in contrast to the overriding values of the organization of which we're part. And because of things like that, it is relatively easy to distinguish oneself in the field of education because of dependable work ethic, because of the spirit of Christ, where we should be more patient, we should be more kind, we should be more loving, and we are. We are able to avoid a negative mindset more easily than a person who is not committed to Christ. I can understand some of the things that Ivan said a few moments ago. Every reason to be discouraged, every reason not to stay in that environment. Because education is a profession in turmoil, the common mindset is one of being negative, and it is so refreshing to work with those who are not of that mindset. And Christians are able better because of dependence on the Spirit, and because we know the end and the reasons for doing it, and because we know we're totally loved, accepted, and forgiven by God, the motivation is there, the ability to be more kind and patient is there. And that type of thing is in such short supply that it is easy to distinguish oneself. Criticizing the boss, criticizing the administration, not being happy with the budget, not being happy with my colleagues. I'm working a little bit more than that person. We'll address that in the next bargaining unit contract. That type of thing is not conducive to quality education. That type of thing is what you are able more easily to live above and to distinguish yourself. And in the process of distinguishing yourself, you have opportunities for Christian witness that are all out of perspective to what you'd have otherwise. And as a result of that kind of a mindset, that kind of a work ethic, that kind of a dedication, you're the one that ends up more often than not with a fun assignment when the fun assignments come along. And I mentioned that my wife and I have had more good things happen to us in our lifetime already. If we didn't have any more good things happen to us, we'd have no complaints. Since coming to Masters, I'm continuing to have a whole lot of good things happen, so I'm not expecting that to end, and it isn't going to end. But we needed a speaker. I'll just give you one example. We needed a speaker at the university for dedicating one of our new facilities, and I was the one that had the joy of going down to visit with the governor to see if he could come up to be part of that. I was the one that had the joy of flying over to Rome. We wanted the director of one of the cardinals from the Catholic Church to come and be one of our speakers. And there are instances like that that come along for a person who makes this kind of a commitment to the job and commitment to people. Now, there are choices that sometimes are difficult to make. My role with the Office of Education and my role with the university provided opportunities on a regular basis to be part of receptions, to be part of social occasions. And it was an essential part from my perspective of doing the job. There's so many things that you're able to accomplish in that kind of a setting that you couldn't otherwise. There's some concerns on the part of Christians about being involved in social settings where alcohol is served and where there's that kind of an environment. From my perspective, it's possible for a Christian to be there. I'm not saying for everyone, but from my perspective, some of the best discussions I had relating to Christ occurred in just that kind of a setting. It's a convicting thing for people in that kind of environment after they've had a drink or two or three too many to see a person there having a good time who isn't drinking anything but Cokes. And it's kind of a challenge to them and kind of a convicting thing to them. And sometimes I'm concerned that as Christians, we tend to live a little too much in isolation. And we're not called to live that way. We're called to be separate. We're in the world, but not part of it. And I think we need to be careful how we interpret that. And again, what I'm saying in regard to how it was possible for me to function, I don't want you to assume that that's the way you would need to function in that kind of a setting. In regard to ministries, there are, life is a ministry. And we in this room, view whatever facet of education we'll become involved with as absolutely sacred, because we don't recognize any distinction between sacred and secular. And as we approach our vocation and profession from that standpoint, it's one continual ministry, because we're always being watched. We're different and unique enough that we're always being watched. And when we make a mistake, it's a little more serious than for those who make that kind of mistake on a regular basis. When we forget to be kind, when we forget to be loving, it stands out in a more noticeable way than in the lives of some other people. But we view our activity from the time we arrive at work until we go home from work as one continual flow of ministry. Some of the ministries are very obvious and definite. On most secular college campuses, there are university Christian fellowship groups, campus crusade groups, or church-sponsored student ministries. And it's just such a natural thing to be involved in that kind of a ministry. I had the joy of being the faculty advisor for University Christian Fellowship for quite a number of years. Possible to have a real fine impact that way from the standpoint of working with the officers behind the scenes, planning outreach-type programs, and then being involved in some of those outreach-type programs. As a Christian, you're always the token when it comes time for an invocation, when it comes time for something like that. And that's a fine opportunity to minister, even though in the minds of some people, it's a formality, something like an invitation. And there's more likely to be an invitation as you're part of a given luncheon or dinner simply because you're there. There's more likely to be an invitation than there would otherwise. But you're around, and people know you're around, and you're asked to be involved in that kind of thing. Maybe the major opportunity for Christian witness is simply the fact of being there. And just opportunities on an individual basis to share Christ, as there is the process of distinguishing oneself, people are really curious about some of the things that make you different. And that there's an opportunity in really strange ways, at really strange circumstances, that people will bring up an issue concerning their mother who's sick, or they really were on this binge last night and just absolutely disgusted with themselves for what they did and wish they didn't live that way. So many things like that to come along. And when there's a tragedy, and sometimes when there are real joys, you're often the first person that a non-Christian will share that kind of thing with. And it's really important to be there and to love people and to let them know, just communicate the feeling that you are available. The ministry is really a calling to meaning and reality and purpose, and our ministry is to be servant leaders in whatever we do. We have such a tremendous opportunity to be servant leaders in the field of education. Just a couple cautions, and I'll 1 minute from being done here. Just a couple cautions. I mentioned earlier that we are always being watched, and it's important to have our sustained personal spiritual growth, not only because we need it and want it, but because there's so many people depending on us that it's serious when we let them down, and we are always being watched. And another caution I would say is don't develop a persecution complex. Sometimes because we're in a distinct minority, it's easy to develop a persecution complex, but we can't do that. If we have any kind of an understanding of how much we are loved and accepted and forgiven by God and the purpose we have, sometimes the persecution complex, sometimes some of the persecution we ask for, and because we are too isolated, we are too standoffish, and we come across as being detached. So here's this goody-goody person who really doesn't relate, and it's easy to ask for some persecution. Some persecution is going to be there. We know that. That's biblical. But sometimes some of the persecution that comes along, we really do ask for. So be careful about that. And then, from my perspective, there is no way of sustained functioning in the kind of environment in which we function. A really challenging environment, an exciting environment. I'm basically a positive person, so don't take some of the negative comments I have made out of perspective. But absolutely essential for being involved in this kind of an environment is your local church and the support group or groups that you're part of in your local church. Your own spiritual growth and development, your own spiritual strength. There's no choice but to have that kind of extensive involvement with your local church. Today is the anniversary of the death of Robert Raikes. How many of you have had a Christian education course and are familiar with the name of Robert Raikes? Well, oh, good, one. prior to your graduating from Master's College, you'll need to learn about Robert Raikes. Robert Raikes was the founder of the Sunday school movement in England. I know more of you are familiar with Robert Raikes than raise your hand. But he had the idea of establishing Sunday schools for the neglected children in his neighborhood. And it really caught on in Gloucester, England. One person had a vision for doing something, and it's spread all over England, the United States, and all over. Now, that was a long time ago. He died in 1811. The Sunday school movement's that old. But I just mentioned the anniversary of his death today, because as we're unentangled with so many things that entangle non-Christians in an educational environment, we're more free to focus, we're more free to be creative and innovative. And a good, creative, innovative idea like Robert Drake's had, there's room for those in education. There's a crying need for those in education, and it's a tremendously challenging field in which to move. As Christians in education, there are very unique tent maker opportunities too. Pay scales range from very low to very high. There's some very, very comfortable salaries in the field of education. But as a tent maker, there is hardly any field that is more easily to become involved with than the field of education. Well, God bless you good people as in this arena of life you work to rightly divide the word of truth. I'm just going to be fascinated as I'm able to keep track of you all and how you commit your lives in the fields that you become involved with in the future. Thank you. Mm-hmm.